Good morning again. Last week we talked about why nobody wants to go to church anymore. And I said it was kind of an ironic title since you all are here. So obviously somebody wants to go to church. But in any case, it's talking about why people generally who do not attend church on a regular basis, why they do not attend church. And today we're going to be talking about part two. Last week we talked about trends in U.S. culture, trends in the church, how it's declining, and how that 43% of Americans say they attend church on a regular basis, but in actuality only 18.7% actually come on any given Sunday. One in five Americans say that they are sure that God exists, but they don't identify, and they identify with a faith group, yet they still don't attend church on a regular basis. Less than half of those people attend church on a regular basis. Each year, 4,000 churches close in America, and only 1,000 open. So the number of churches is also declining. Between 2010 and 2012, half of the churches in America reported no new members joining that church in that two-year span. So people are leaving in record numbers from the church, yet when you ask Americans, what is your faith? What is your religion? They almost always overwhelmingly answer they are Christians. When you ask people, well, why don't you attend church? What is the reason that you don't attend church? These were the top four answers. Number one, I feel judged. Number two, I don't want to be lectured. Number three, Christians are a bunch of hypocrites. And number four, your God is irrelevant to my life. This echoes another study that said that they wanted community and only received judgment. So you probably know some people who have said those very things, or maybe you have said them yourself when considering whether or not to attend church. 87% of the people surveyed labeled Christians as judgmental. Fair or unfair, most people view the church as critical, disapproving, and condemning. When we look at the ways that people look at churches, let's say that it's a town. Let's say that it's a city. And we're going to say that in this city, there are six churches. And one of the churches is seen as a police station. One of the churches is seen as a political action committee. One as a theater. One as a mortuary. One as a seminary. And one as a museum. Which one of those sounds appealing to you? Let's look at the police department first. In the police department church, the church is all about rules. Rules rule. And you have a handout in your bulletin, and some of these things are in there, and we're going to be doing some activities that you'll need that bulletin handout here in a minute. But law and obedience are the top priorities in a police department church. It's almost as if they've taken the Ten Commandments and expanded them to the 1,000 commandments that you must follow. A quick way to spot if a church is like this is when you go into the church, look at the signs on the wall. Are the signs on the wall communicating welcome, or are they communicating don't spill your coffee on the carpet? This was a real life account of someone who went to a church whose kids went to a church during vacation Bible school who would fit this church police, the police station. Today I picked up our two young kids from vacation Bible school at a nearby church. I asked them what they learned. Without hesitation, they said, when you're in line, walk, don't talk. Look straight ahead and don't play around. When you get inside, sit quietly and don't talk or move. Hoping for something a little deeper, I asked if they had learned anything else. Yes, they said. If you get up to go to the bathroom, you have to sit in the back and can't go back and sit with your friends. What kind of message and impact did that church have on those kids? That's what they take away from it. That's what they take away from Vacation Bible School. People who are seeking and needing God's grace, God's love, God's forgiveness, are they going to find it in a police station church? Probably not. The second type of church in our town here is the Political Action Committee Church. This is where social action dominates the agenda, and they see it as the prime responsibility. The people there are talking about issues and actions and political candidates and things that they have to do things. Now, these are all good things, probably, that they're doing. You want to do things well for the environment. You want to do things for people who are in need. But these things can't be the main focus of a church. The main focus needs to be on experiencing God, learning about God, studying about God, sharing God's love and forgiveness and acceptance. Churches should draw people together, the author of the book says, not draw lines in the sand. So are people fighting for another cause? Is that what people are really looking for when they're looking for a church? Or are they longing for meaning that Jesus can give them? The third church in our town is the theater. Now the theater, everybody loves the stage and everybody loves the show. There's a spectacle every week. There's wow effects. Maybe a fog machine, laser lights. All those things that are really cool, right? They may advertise themselves as the best show in town on a Sunday morning. But are people really longing to watch someone on stage in a cleverly scripted world that frowns on flaws or technical difficulties? It may be entertaining, but it's not relational. In addition, the world's entertainment is always going to be better than what a church can do week in and week out. If it's about entertainment, the church loses. It has to be about the relationships. The fourth church in our town is the mortuary. Now, mortuary is a very serious place. And, you know, mortuaries have that peculiar smell that you only get in a mortuary. They have muted colors, subdued lighting, quiet, pensive music, solemn and serious, not a fun place. They stress the somber aspects of worship and faith, quite the opposite than the theater. And does following Jesus mean that you can't have fun, that you don't get to enjoy life, that you don't get to enjoy church? The fifth church in our town is the seminary. Seminary churches believe that they serve as the keepers of the facts. The primary purpose of these churches is to transfer knowledge. There's an academic rigor, there's lectures, tests, debates, research. And all of that is done at the expense of actually living out our faith. Teaching truths has become more important than living those truths out in daily lives. If you think about people that you have great relationships with in your life, everybody think of somebody in your head right now that you have a great relationship with. Did you start that relationship by memorizing or learning important facts about that person? Did you become closer by learning their genealogy? No. You grow closer with them by spending time with each other, by sharing your lives with one another, by listening, caring, supporting. Teaching and learning are just one step in the process, in the journey of faith. But it cannot stop at mere learning knowledge. You have to be able to put that knowledge into practice. The point of attending church is not so that you can beat someone at biblical trivial pursuit. Though it is fun to beat someone at biblical trivial pursuit. Though, since I got my master's, no one will ever play with me. But churches can't be just about the transfer of information. It has to be life-changing. Now, our sixth type of church is the museum. Now, the museum church is where people talk about the good old days. How great the church was back in the day. They will fill the foyer with stories of things that have happened in the past. Coffee is not permissible anywhere except on tiled floor because you don't want to damage, again, the carpet. You don't want to mess anything up. Tradition is valued over all else because that's the way it's always been done. There's no room for innovation, no room for expression, no room for anything that even hints of being new. Now, if you think about this, can you ever really feel comfortable with and connect with someone if they, say, lived in a museum? Or would you always kind of be on guard that you might break something? I know if my friend lived in a museum, I would be walking around like this, and my children would either not be allowed to come over, or I'd have a hand, and Lori would have the other hand so they don't touch anything and break it. In this type of church, you worry about sitting in someone else's assigned seat. Now, looking at those six types, I want you to think, if you had to, if I forced you to pick one that you think our church is most like, I want you to think about that. Now, there's pros and cons of each type of church, and I don't think any one church fits perfectly into one of the six. These are just general stereotypes. But if you could probably make a case for just about all of them that we have some tendencies of each of those six. But what do you think overall do you think that we're most like? The police station, the political action committee, the theater, the cemetery, or the seminary. I enjoyed my seminary experience greatly. I'm still paying for it, in fact. The mortuary or the museum. So on your bulletin there, there is a place to rank 1 to 6 on those 6. What do you think the church is most like? What do you think the church is least like? And if you're a guest here this morning, I'm very interested to see how you rate us, knowing us for an hour. How do you think we are already? So now mark those papers. And now I want you to turn to someone near you and just discuss it real quick. You got about a minute to talk about it. Why did you pick it? And you can turn around and talk to Marilyn. Yeah. Why did you pick it? All right, we'll come back together now. And I want to know what you decided. I'm sure you all came to consensus. Right? And I'll take a motion, formal motion from the floor officially label our church. No. What did you think we were most like? Seminary? She said, museum, stay out of my seat. And that is true. But we do allow coffee in the sanctuary, though. You do. You do have assigned seats, I know. So, guess what? Next Sunday, we're going to do it again. Next Sunday, sit somewhere new. Except Marcy and Phil. You can stay at the soundboard and the computer. Everyone else, next Sunday, it's a switcheroo Sunday. So, sit somewhere new. Look it. Yeah. And not just one row up, Doug. I see. All right, what did you say that we were least like? Mortuary, theater, police department. We found the curator of the museum. Yeah, theater now. We're theater now. So it gets you thinking, at least. Okay? So think about what these stereotypes are. And in general, people that don't know us are going to classify us in one of these six types of groups. One of these six types of groups. And so when we're talking about why people don't attend church, and the number one reason being they feel judged, what does that mean for us as a church? If we're truly living with the actions and the love of Jesus and the attitude of Jesus, we're not going to be judgmental of others. And to demonstrate that we're not judgmental, we're not going to put up a billboard that says we're not judgmental, because I don't think that'd be very effective. We have to practice radical hospitality. And the biggest part of radical hospitality is to learn to love one another. And it's not to love just the people that we're like, not just the people that we like being around, not just liking and loving people that we're like, but instead, looking around the room and loving everyone we see because they are made in God's image and have value to God. Therefore, they have value to us. Because to truly love people is to really validate the fact that they are created in God's image. 1 Corinthians 13, the famous love passage. Maybe you had it read at your wedding, or you've heard it read at every wedding you've ever been to. Okay? That passage, love is patient, love is kind, you can go on. That passage is read at weddings, and people talk about it in terms of romantic love. But if you look at the context, because context is king or queen, context is king or queen, okay? The context is in relation to church relations. It's talking about how we're to relate to one another as Christians, as people that attend a local body of believers. So let's look at the characteristics. It's also on your handout there, of 1 Corinthians 13. And I want you to think about, does our church fit the bill of a loving church? When people experience our church, and you're going to mark an X or a dot or a smiley face or a sad face, whatever you want to mark, somewhere on that continual line. So when people experience our church, do they find kindness? And I think you're, what does it say, almost all the time and rarely are your, is your scale? Do they find an absence of jealousy? Do they find an absence of comparisons or competition? And we're not talking football here. Go Seahawks. An absence of pride or egos. An absence of rudeness or people demanding their own way. An absence of irritability. An absence of a record of wrongs. An absence of grudges. An absence of rejoicing over injustices. Rejoicing when truth wins out. People who never give up. People who never lose faith. And do they experience hope? Look back at what on your thing there, and what did you mark highest and what did you mark lowest? Turn back to that group you had just a second ago and talk real quickly about what did you find, what did you mark highest and what did you mark lowest on that, those scales? Or was everything right in the middle? All right, what do you think? What did you mark? What? Rejoicing over injustices? That would be being happy. Wait, is it? Did it say absence of? Yeah. Absence of, that means you're not happy when things go bad for people. That would be rejoicing over injustices. So what'd you mark highest? Kindness. That's great from a first-time guest to say that. Praise the Lord, hallelujah. And you said, what, hope? Hope? Faith? Patience? People who never give up? An absence of rejoicing over injustices. When people meet a Christian, someone who says that they're following Christ, or when they come to a church, they expect to find judgment of some sort. And by practicing this radical hospitality, we can show people that we don't judge them. We don't look down on them. But instead, we welcome them with open arms. Jesus did not say to the people that were listening to him, become like me, and then I will accept you. He said, come as you are. It's like you go and meet a coach, and the coach just rips into you and yells at you, because you're not following the team's code of conduct. And your response is, I'm not even on the team. Yet that's how some people think the world has to work. That Jesus has these rules, like the police station state. And you have to follow all these rules before you're even good enough to even think about coming to church. You have to follow all these rules before you even think about being baptized or following Christ. But that's not what God says. If that was the way it was, No one would be able to follow Christ. No one would be in a church. Because we're all sinners. We all have things we need to work on. We all need Jesus. And so we have to accept people as they are when they come and when we go out, because we are Christ's representatives to the world. Radical hospitality is accepting people, welcoming people, and having genuine relationships with people. It's about being a true friend to people. What do you think if someone is a first-time guest? What do you think the most important time is for them to determine if the church is friendly or not? When you walk in the door? Okay, that's not right. Greeting time? No, that's not right. First 10 minutes? Nope. At the end, when they walk out the door. Because that last 10 minutes right after church, whose job is it to be friendly? Yeah, but nobody has that official job, right? We have greeters at the beginning. We have everyone's friendly during the stand-up and greet time, even if you don't like it. But that's when people judge whether or not a church is friendly. What's happening after church? When everything's over and everyone's free to do whatever they want now, how are you being? Was that greeting time genuine? Was that hi, hello that you got when you walked in the door, was that genuine? Or was church is over, now I can be like myself and just be with my friends? What do you do? Think about it. When church is over, where do you go to? Do you go talk to the first-time guests? Do you ask them how they are, how they enjoyed the service? If they have any chocolate that you can borrow?
Borrow?
Okay, not borrow. Okay? Or are you still interested in a relationship? Because boy, during greeting time, you really seemed interested in me. But now what? In Scripture, Jesus uses many metaphors to describe the relationship between him and the church. It's a parent-child, father-son, father-daughter, bride and groom, vine branch, sheep, shepherd. They're all very relational. What if we believe that the relationship with other people matter, which hopefully we do, but then what if we actually acted like it? If we believe that relationships matter, why don't we act like it when we're at church? To build these relationships does not take money. It's more than just remembering someone's name, though that's a good thing. And it's more than making a good first impression. It's more than music. It's more than preaching. It takes time. It takes time. You have to be willing to put in the time to build relationships with people. It's not something that you can fast track, outsource, or leave to chance. It has to be intentional. You have to reach out and build relationships without expectation of getting anything in return. But just for the sake of building that relationship, because they're a person and they matter. Jesus calls us the hands and feet of God. How would Jesus respond to those people that come across our life? There's 10 practical steps that are in your bulletin there of how to practice radical hospitality. Number one is embrace the power of environment. Most of us underestimate the power of our surroundings, but we need to make our places not just a cool place to hang out, but make them a center of ministry. The famous Canadian philosopher Marshall McLuhan said, "The medium is the message. How we communicate is often more important than the things we say." If you break down communication, it comes down to 7% content, 38% sound, and 55% look. Most of what is communicated is nonverbal. So what are we communicating with our body language, with our sanctuary, with our church? How are we communicating that? Number two is understand the power of language and get rid of churchy jargon. Now, I'm not saying get rid of these theological terms that are so important to us and that are foundational to our faith. What I'm saying is we have to stop using them like everyone knows what we're talking about. We need to explain them and communicate with people what these words mean so that people don't feel like outsiders, that they don't feel like they're on the outside looking in. Have you ever been with people that have the inside joke that you have no idea what's happening, but they're just cracking themselves up? How do you feel at that moment? Yeah, dumb. Yeah, like, okay, I'm missing something. I'm left out. It doesn't make you feel real welcome, does it? That's how it can be if you don't know what we're talking about and the words we're using. Number three, take time for befriending. Again, they don't happen by accident. They have to be intentional, deliberate. And we need to make personal relationships a priority when we come together as a church. Number four, remember friends and family. Bring friends and family. The number one response for people coming into church is they come because their friend or their family member invited them. And if you don't want to invite your friends or family to church, there is something wrong. We should want to bring people to church. And if there's a reason why you won't bring someone to church that has to do with the church itself, let's talk about it and see what we can do about it. Because we should all feel comfortable at our church, and we should all feel comfortable inviting people to church. We need to, number five, understand the power of names. Instead of making excuses why you can't remember names, do things to help you try to remember the people's names. Number six, get better acquainted through personal storytelling. Ask someone, tell about a time, or what did you do this weekend? Something like that. Get people talking when there's no right or wrong answers. Set the tone. If you want others to open up, you need to set that example. Eat together. This, of course, is one of my favorites. I think it should be higher than number eight, though. And I would put eat chocolate together. Church attendees who share meals together experience higher church satisfaction. So it's not just because I like potlucks that we do potlucks. There's data to back it up, but that's a good thing. We need to try to engage people over meals and over food, and with meals and foods and especially desserts. Number nine, we don't want to underestimate the power of a smile. And number 10, we need to be patient because it takes time. But if you want to know what the bottom line is, if you say, what's the one thing I can do to practice radical hospitality today in 10 minutes? What can I do? Bring chocolate? All right, there's two things. No. The number one thing is be a friend. Don't try to think about what would a church do in this situation if I saw this happening? What would a church do? Ask, what would a friend do? If that was my friend, how would I respond? And then respond that way. That will change the way we interact with one another if we think about each other, even people we don't know as friends. George Barna says, in our experience, as believers practice loving attitudes and behavior towards others, inside and outside their faith community, unchurched friends and family don't have to be talked into church participation. They seek it out, drawn in by the promise of love. What are we doing to be willing to reach out to people in love and relationships? What are we doing for our friends? What are we doing for our family? Sometimes we get so bogged down with church business. Like, we have board meeting today after church. And I know people are going to want to go right to that board meeting table and get going. But is that practicing radical hospitality, even though the Seahawks are playing in 10 minutes? No, that is not practicing radical hospitality, though Bubba can move the meeting quite fast today. Radical hospitality is spending the time that you need to spend with people, showing them that you care. And it's not just showing that you care, trying to get them to come back to church or volunteer for this or to become a Christian even. You're trying to build a relationship with someone because God cares about them, and therefore you should care about them, with expecting nothing in return. Sometimes people are going to disappoint you. Can I get an amen? But that God doesn't say, love people unless they disappoint you, or love people unless they hurt you. He says, love people. That's what God has called us to do, and that's what Jesus has called us to do. Lord, help us to love authentically. Next week in part two, we're going to talk about the second reason that people say they do not like to attend church, and that is, I don't want to be lectured.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.